Turuntuset tulee Joonael.
Today's main topic is how to measure communication effectiveness. Usually we measure the communication either by quantity, that means counting all the published bits and pieces and calculating how much it would have cost us if we had to buy advertising for the same amount. Or we evaluate the published material that the photos get more credits than plain text, or that the editorials are highly valued than news are. Or we conduct the research and study the change of perceptions and attitudes. Are these the ways, the right ones, to get to know how effective the communication has been? And what do you think?
Well, this is a very, very complicated topic. And it depends who you're talking to, I think, really. Because if you're talking to a marketing person, they might say, AVs, we understand that. You know, there's some print on a page, we can put a size on it, and if we bought that piece of collateral, we know how much it had cost. And in a way, you can say, well, that's good, because it means for any piece of editorial that you might gain, you can actually put a quantitative number on it. But public relations people would say, no, that's not a good idea, because what AVEs don't measure are impact. They're what we call an output measure. So they're like an intermediary measure of success. It's what a newspaper might publish, but the end result, you'll never know what the end impact of that is. You don't know whether somebody has gone out and done something because they've read that copy, or whether or not they've changed their views on something. So a PR person would say that's not really an effective measure, because you don't know what the results of that, the end results of that have been. So AVEs are a bit of a dirty word, really, certainly in the United Kingdom. But senior managers quite like AVEs because they want to know what the return on investment has been. And often public relations work is reduced down to what does it mean in terms of value for money. And maybe later on we'll talk about other measures that you can put in place rather than just value for money. So I have a bit of a problem with AVEs. I don't know about you, Raoul.
I would say that every measure in PR is already quite well, because in most cases we just don't know how to measure this impact you're telling about. So please continue. How you measure this impact?
Okay, well, we talked about maybe photos on a page and if they were worth more. And I guess in some ways it depends what you're wanting to achieve. If your end result is you want to change somebody's attitudes or behaviour, then you don't know whether or not you getting some copy or a photograph in a newspaper will actually achieve anything, unless you go and talk to those people themselves who you're ultimately aiming at. However, if you're just wanting to indulge in what we call the thud factor, the thud factor is when you want a big, heavy tome of press cuttings, and you can go to your boss and say, look how good I am with the press. I've impressed them and they've published all this material. Isn't that fantastic? Then you could call that, in a way, a measure of success, because you have been successful with the press. So if your objective is to get some coverage in the press, then you can say, thud, that's impact.
It's done.
It's done. But if you're saying we want to use the press as an intermediary to get to another group of people, then you have to talk to that group of people. And the intermediary, the impact on the press is just an impact that you have on the way to really contacting those people who you want to change the behaviour of or attitudes of ultimately. So it depends really on the purpose.
So if I look at it from the company's point of view, it means that the result of communication can be increase of sales.
It can. And certainly for consumer campaigns, if we're again talking about public relations, I think you should be able to see a very clear line of sight between our objective is to increase sales and then, say, And this is what we did. Shall I give you an example?
Very good, of course.
I used to work in financial services, not a very popular service area at the moment. But we ran a campaign where we tried to find out what the power of public relations was. And we had two big newspapers in the UK who did a lot of copy on personal finance. And they were very influential journalists. So what we did was, did an experiment. And the newspaper didn't really know that we were doing an experiment. But we put an advert in both these newspapers. And the advert had a sort of coupon on it or a phone-up number, or you could get on the internet and, you know, and a product may be sold as a result of that. We then, because the public relations people had a really good relationship with the journalists, and because it happened to be a really innovative product, we put an advert in the newspaper, but the journalists also wrote some copy about this product. And then we developed the product and put a couple of little bells and whistles on it. And again, we got some editorial copy in the newspaper and no advert. So there you've got advert on its own, editorial and advert, and editorial.
Three things to compare.
Three things to compare.
And the result?
The result was that the most powerful was the middle one. The second most powerful was editorial on its own. So you were able to demonstrate really clearly. And the interesting thing about
how big was the difference?
It was almost double.
Really?
Almost double for the middle one than an advert on its own. But the interesting one about the editorial on its own was that people then had to go away and find out who to contact, because there was no advert there with contact details, you know, so they had to actually go and find out.
We are lazy.
But it was still the second most impactful one because, you know, the journalist had said it and it had added so much weight and credence to the endorsement of the product that it was more powerful than the advert alone. Because the readers felt that they were, the editors were working for them and identifying the best things for them. So they were going to believe it more than the advert on its own.
Very good.
Really interesting example.
This measuring, this talking after. This is a thing we don't do in Estonia because it's too costly to find out who has seen, how they did understand, how this did have impact or it didn't. How you do it in your country?
Well, yes, it is expensive, but it's really...
It's a research.
Yeah, well, it is. But we know from traditional marketing that actually it's done as a piece. You know, you do the research beforehand, you do the campaign, and then you measure it afterwards. And that's the campaign, and you pay for it all. In public relations, traditionally, we haven't paid for the research at the beginning and the research at the end. So it becomes a bit of a shock when somebody says, please, can I have some money to measure the results? It also comes as a shock to ask for some money to do some benchmarking, which would sound very sensible at the beginning. So our estimate is, and there's been quite a lot of work done on this, that you need about 10%, 10 to 15% of the budget to evaluate properly if you're going to do a public relations campaign. There are some really cheap ways that you can do that. You don't have to have massively elaborate campaigns. You can do SurveyMonkey, quick online survey. It's not going to be entirely scientific, but it gives you an indication. You can ring a few people up. You can do things like consumer panels, focus groups. That becomes more expensive. But there's quite a lot that you can do online or quite quickly by just ringing people up or talking to them. If you have face-to-face customer relationships, you know, you just talk to people when they come into the shop or however you sell. And if it's online, you know, just tweet, find out, just ask people very simply.
But this is a case when you consider public relation as a campaign. But very often as a person working with PR, in a company or in an organization, there is a lot of everyday work. And yes, you have some big campaigns with major topics, but more often you have something you have to work with every day, or maybe not daily press releases, but maybe weekly or bi-weekly, and maybe some kind of feature stories, what you can initiate, editorials, whatever you get. So it's much more difficult to say that this is the campaign. So how to measure the results in that way, or in that case?
Yeah, it is more difficult, and often short-term results are wanted quickly. Tell us now what the impact has been of all this work that you've done for the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
And
it's not always possible. And some things do take a long time. If you think about a big issue, I don't know, climate change. How long has it taken from when the science first came out for us now, as you know, general members of the general public, to actually believe it? 20 years?
They probably still don't believe it.
Well, some people don't believe it still. Or what about, you know, all the messages, health messages about obesity? That's been going on for 10 years. And people know that it damages, you know, unhealthy eating damages them, or not taking exercise damages them. So I think there are ways we can do this. If I just go back a little bit, I think there are a number of measures that you can make. At one level, there's an output measure. This is a technical jargon for you now. An output is what you put out into the media or out into the community. It might be the beginnings of a community campaign where people are invited to meetings or something like that. So that's one measure. What you put out there? What's the output? And then and can you measure, you know, the effect of that output? And you can by asking people. But the longer term impacts are called outcomes. Now you can measure outcomes over time, sometimes for these campaigns that take a long time. And again, I'll give you another example from financial services.
Okay.
We're talking about financial services. We ran a corporate communications campaign over about 3 years. And what we saw over a period of time, because we did do tracking research, was awareness of this, of our organisation, increased over time. Now, what were we doing that was different? The advertising bursts always happened in January because people have spent all the money at Christmas, and so they start saving in January for their holidays, and in September because they've gone on the holidays and now they need to save for Christmas. Okay, so those are the two peak advertising times. And what we found was by doing a corporate communications campaign, so this was a media campaign, but it was also doing awards for journalists who were the most insightful commentators on financial relations. And we did some community work as well. And we did a big survey of, I worked in housing finance, of the housing stock in the UK. And this increased awareness. And what we found was over time was we had to spend less money on advertising in January and September to get the peak level of awareness. Because awareness always plateaus. You get to a point where actually it's like the pursuit of ultimate hi-fi. You've got to spend a fortune to just increase awareness, yeah, a little bit. So to get to that plateau, we could see that the awareness curve was moving up and it cost less in advertising to get it to its peak than it did before. And the only thing that had changed was public relations. So we could measure that. And we measured it in how little we had to spend on advertising to get to that peak level of awareness. So that's a measure over time.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
And if we talk about things like obesity or, you know, climate change, you can measure awareness increasing over time. Or you might measure behaviour change over time. And you can do that often by talking to doctors, you know, so you don't always have to speak to the people at the end of the process. How many doctors are anti-smoking campaigns, you know, how many people are coming to see their doctor to help them stop smoking? If that increases, then it's a good proxy indicator that what you're doing is having an impact. You might be setting up sort of help groups, support groups for people who are wanting to stop smoking. How many of those? If the number of those is increasing, then it indicates, it's a good proxy indicator that what you're doing is having an impact.
Very good. Effectiveness, in my mind, is very tightly connected to goal setting. Yes. It means that, as we usually say, that you have to measure what you have targeted.
Well, this is comes back to what we were talking about, how you need to do some benchmark research. So you need to understand where people are starting from. And if you're starting with a blank sheet of paper, they know nothing at all about your product or they know nothing at all about the service, then the first set of objectives is probably going to be about awareness building. Getting people aware of something is a lot easier than getting people to do something. And we normally say that objectives are set at three levels. So it's awareness, attitudes and behaviour, or I like to call it think, feel and do. So getting people to do something is really hard. So two ways you can do that. One is, if you're wanting them to do things straight away, is you've got to give them a lot of incentive to do something. So, and we know about incentives, free gifts, etc., etc., that's all about getting people to do things. And they've also got to feel good about doing it. So there's a sort of psychological part to that as well. But normally people go through a process where they consider something, they make their mind up about it, and then, yeah, that's okay. And so their attitude is, you know, change your attitude a bit, and then you go on to behaviour. So starting off, understanding where people are on that journey is really important. And so if they know nothing about it, it's going to cost you more and it'll probably take longer and you'll have to incentivise their behaviour. You'll hear about nudge in the nudge movement. Do you know about nudge movement? This is a big movement, where I come from in the UK. And this is about getting sort of gradual, incremental changes in behaviour. So people behave in particular ways. Don't ask them to make a 360-degree turn. They're not going to do that. Just nudge them along. Just get them to make incremental changes. And then you're likely to be more successful. So you need to do that benchmark and then you need to set your objectives at one of those three levels.
Okay, but in the real life, more often the picture is mixed. It might be that there are about 30% who don't know anything. There are about 30% who do know something that might be right or wrong. And there are some kind of maybe 30% who are slightly positive towards changing or thinking about changing the behavior. It's not so clear as it's kind of in theory or in theoretical way. What to do then?
Yeah, absolutely right. It's a brilliant question because, again, in advertising, in marketing, public relations, we normally do a campaign that has a beginning, a middle and an end. But actually, you need a beginning and then a beginning and then a beginning because people are coming into, you know, understanding or whatever at different stages. So some people, you know, the early adopters in the classic marketing parlance will be on the journey. Others won't have started yet. So you need to do all those things. You need to do, you know, awareness raising and behaviour change maybe at the same time. So you'll have different, you know, the stages of the campaign won't be completely sequential. You'll have to run them at the same time.
But how to measure the results at the end? If you do at the same time everything to everyone, then it's kind of the...
Because it's a continuum, so some people, the end results will be developing as well. So you need to identify who it is who is starting off on the journey. If you can, and I agree, it's not always possible, who it was who was just aware, and are they moving along? Who it was who was an early adopter, and often you know those people because they're contacting you. They're really engaged, they're excited by what you're doing, so often they come to you. So this is not all about one-way communication. You know, these days especially, you know, people get in touch with you. and they're asking questions, and the nature of their questions will indicate to you where they are on that journey.
Okay, but it might be also the case that that the early adopters, they are very aware of what happens in media. They read different articles, they watch different programs, they Google and have the kind of network that is maybe more concerned about the issue than the others are. It means that it's much more easier to influence them to exchange behavior, because they get the information faster. And then there is a big group of people who doesn't know anything, because no one they know is interested in, they don't read, they don't follow the TV program, or at least not this one where your topic is presented. So, and you might get easily answers from the early adopters who are really interested in talking, and the others just say, sorry, I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we're assuming here that it's you and your organisation that does all the communication, and we know that those early adopters can often be advocates for you, and people talk to people like themselves, and you know, really good public relations and marketing people understand that not everything can be originated by them, and they rely on those others to talk about them and recruit people for them, change their minds for them, get them on board, and generally, you know, do the part of the job for them. If you think, let me give you an example. Harley-Davidson motorbikes, okay. They have got a really interesting link with the people who ride Harley-Davidson, because, as you know, it's a lifestyle. It's not just about buying a bike. It's about a lifestyle. And it's the Harley-Davidson owners who sell Harley-Davidson bikes, because they are absolutely passionate about it. So much so that every 6 months, Harley-Davidson sit down with their bike owners, with the HOGS, Harley Owners Groups, OK? And they talk to them, and they even do product development with them. Because they know what people like them want. So it's not just about them being advocates for the products. They actually help design the products. So they're that embedded, and they're so enthusiastic about motorbikes, Harley-Davidsons, that they're actually used to create product with Harley-Davidson themselves. So that's the power of advocacy, and that's really what you want to get to if you're in marketing. You don't have to say much yourself when other people are telling your story for you.
Very good. And now I just come to, I do think, the concluding question that among our listeners, there are very many SMEs who probably, or most of them, cannot afford a PR specialist. Many of them cannot even afford a marketing specialist. Maybe they use some agencies to help. But what are the three most important things what they could do in order to kind of understand how to communicate and what kind of impact they can really expect from the things they do?
I think one of the big problems for SMEs is you're busy, busy, busy.
Yeah,
particularly
that's
true. If you're the owner and you've got, you know, 10 people working for you. The last thing you want to do is spend lots of time writing newsletters and doing all the marketing stuff. You just don't. So I think it's good to start where you are. You're in business as an SME owner because you've got something that people want. And the people who you need to keep happiest are those who are closest to you. So I would say personal contact is really, really important. And if you keep those key customers for you happy, and you talk to them and you keep them involved, and that means just the occasional phone call, the occasional tweet, just making them feel that they're really important to you. It doesn't take a lot of time, but as we've just been saying, they'll do your marketing for you. But you have to look after the people who've looked after you. So that's rule number one. There's a saying that the last 6 feet really counts. And there's nothing like face-to-face contact, you know, being able to look somebody in the eye. And you need to do that. Just spend a bit of time in person as well as doing all these other things. So that's the first thing I'd say. Second thing is that your next biggest ambassadors are the people who work for you. So do make sure that you spend time speaking with them, because they're the ones who really know you. They're the ones who are passionate, because if you're an SME, they'll be working really hard as well and supporting you. So internal communications, so that every contact that there is with your small organisation is a brilliant one, because everybody inside the company is on board. So they're enthusiastic, they feel committed and energised, and that really comes through. You know what it's like when you ring up a company and, you know, it's 15 rings before they answer, or you get on the website, you leave a question and it's not answered, immediately you're put off. So look after the people inside. So keep close those who are outside, your best advocates, look after those inside. And then the last thing I'd say is that you probably can't afford a website. And I think you really need these days. The first thing people do really is go to a website. So if you're going to spend any money at all, do that. And get something on there that's going to be, simple, usable, tells your story. Don't try and emulate other people, tells your story. Get those people who you've kept close to you talking about you on it as well. Do some little videos. Get those advocates on there. Answer the questions. Those are the three things.